Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And our guest today is so interesting. I mean, I know I say that a lot because people are and the people we get here are. This is a journey I don't think I have ever heard before from anyone. So stay tuned here for Cynthia Toussaint to talk about herself. And she has a book called Battle for Grace. And I think you've developed a whole world called Battle for Grace, right?
The world is called For Grace.
Oh, For Grace.
The book is Battle for Grace. They're close. I can see how you mix them up.
And this was from your own really awful experience with, well, you can tell about it. The miracle is that you have gone through this and you look so cheerful
and grounded
and beautiful.
Woo!
So
I like to hear that.
Beautiful you probably looked all the time. But talk about you, and I know you were headed to be a ballet dancer.
I was a ballerina, and I was a ballerina, actor, and singer, a triple threat. Mm-hmm. And I just gotten a part on the show Fame. Remember the old show, the original show Fame? And I injured my leg while dancing at the bar. Mm-hmm. It was my right hamstring, and that triggered the chronic pain disease that today is known as complex regional pain syndrome, or CRPS.
Okay, so I don't know anything by that name, but chronic pain, of course, we all know that.
Yeah.
Say what that is. Because I think
CRPS is a chronic pain disease. It's a disease of the nervous system. It's known as neuropathic pain. It's considered on the McGill scale the worst pain in the world, worse than cancer pain, worse than having a child. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
And it starts with an injury. Mine was a torn hamstring. It can be as minor as a pinprick or as major as a heart attack. And what happens with CRPS is, first, a good thing happens. Our spinal cord says, okay, well, we got a problem. It sends that healthy, normal message to the brain saying we have pain. Mm-hmm. But with CRPS, we don't know why yet. But for some reason, that message can't turn itself off. And rather than getting better, it continues to amplify. And so it's like we have pain, we have pain, pain.
So it's a synapse.
Exactly.
Firing.
And then the neurons in the body that are sending the message to the brain say, hey, we've learned something. So if we don't get early diagnosis, treatment, and cured, which can be done, but only if we're believed, and I'll get to that later, then what happens is the neurons generally then share that information with other neurons. And that's when
it really gets cut.
Exactly. So that's when the disease like mine spreads throughout our body. Mine spreads through my entire body. It ravaged my vocal cords. I was bedridden for 10 years.
No.
Could not speak for 5 years. I couldn't sing for 15 years.
When you say that you couldn't speak for 5 years, you mean there was actual no vocal cords in place?
No, I had so much pain. I could not speak.
Pain.
I was always doubled over. I wrote on a board. Everybody left me. Except for my wonderful partner, John.
Okay, back to.
Wait, did I lose you somewhere?
No, you didn't lose me, except I'm so upset that I want to go back to when you tell the doctor about this.
Yeah, that's really important.
Well, and you use the phrase, you have to be believed. This is...
Well, women are not believed. Women with chronic pain are told that they're crazy. I literally was told...
How do they phrase that in a nice
way? Things like, you have stage fright? They don't phrase it in a nice way. They told me, you have stage fright. I live to be on stage. They told me I had tendonitis from Mars. I was enjoying the secondary gain that I was receiving from my partner, John, who's still with me. God bless that wonderful man. I was told when my arm folded up into a permanent contracture about 27 years ago, a doctor said, you're folding up your arm with your mind just the way one levitates oneself. One doctor said to me, you're only a woman anyway. It doesn't really matter. Why don't you just shoot yourself in the head? I didn't follow through with that treatment plan. Seriously. I mean, people can't believe what doctors said to me. And I still hear things.
I can, except for that last one.
I'm sorry. And by that point, John was coming into all the doctor rooms with me because I wanted him to hear everything.
Oh,
because I knew
you have to have witnesses when you go to a doctor.
Oh, yeah. I was even told to take a truth serum, and I said, okay, as long as I can have somebody on my side in the room, and they said no. And so I didn't take the truth serum because I was in an HMO. I was getting under care. They wouldn't tell me what I had. It's an expensive disease, but it is curable.
Now, when you say they wouldn't tell me what I have, it's an expensive disease, do you suspect that they knew something about it, or
absolutely,
were they just ignorant of it?
No, when I got my records, on a number of records, it said, back then it was called RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It would say RSD ? Things like that. So I knew that they did know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So go ahead. How did this...
So then, well, then when I survived all of this and then I finally got my diagnosis, that was such a, it was a liberating experience for me. I mean, it was the worst diagnosis I could have gotten, but finally they couldn't say I was crazy anymore.
Who made this diagnosis finally? Like, how did you get it was to somebody who made it?
It was somebody in the HMO, but then they took it away because I got media right away. I was getting media already. And then they, it was a doctor who gave me the diagnosis.
Oh, okay.
And then I went outside and I got the diagnosis right away. And then at Kaiser, I've written all about them. So mm-hmm. I've said this at Kaiser, they took it away from me again. They took it away in the media and they'd literally go on television and say, we never told her she had RSD. No, you know, I mean, it was so awful. And yet when I go outside, they'd tell me I had this disease. And when I go back to my Kaiser doctor, they would force me to come in. I had to be on a gurney to come in there. And they hadn't seen me for years to tell me I had RSD. And I was a very unfortunate woman. I mean, it was crazy. The whole thing was crazy.
So how did you get to this stage?
Well, when I finally realized what I had, I finally got out of the HMO and I finally got care. Then I started doing HMO reform work.
I know I'm so ignorant about this.
We're getting the information out there.
When you finally got care, what does that mean? You're in bed for 10 years.
Well, they put me on a medication called Neurontin, mm-hmm. and it's an anticonvulsant, and so it slowed down my spinal cord. And my nervous system slowed down, and it does slow down your reaction, but it got me out of bed. It got me wearing different shoes other than the same pair of tennis shoes that I've been wearing for about 20 years. I mean, hallelujah! My mom said this is the best thing that's happened in our family in the last 20 years. You know, I mean, it was truly amazing.
And it must have been quite a feeling for you to be able to stand up.
Yeah. I mean, I could stand a little bit, yeah. but I'd have to get my legs up really, really fast. And it would sometimes get me to the car. John would carry me down to the car, get me in the car. And within minutes, I'd be screaming and I had to get up and get my legs back up. I spent some time lying in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
And then I'm reliving.
Were you
on
pain medications?
Always, no, they didn't. They wouldn't give me anything because they said it was all in my head. They said it was crazy, but they never sent me to a psychiatrist. I finally said, send me to somebody. I mean, I tried to be crazy. And people with this disease very often is generally women, and we try to be crazy. I even heard about one woman, her sister told me about her. She checked herself into a mental institution. But she was in so much pain, she couldn't stay there. Mm-hmm. So then she left and it ended up, she had cancer that was throughout her body and she was dying. She was very close to death. So by the time I heard about her, it was over, but we're all told we're crazy. After doing the HMO reform, people would recognize me in my wheelchair and they'd say, you're the one who, you know, I heard you on whatever, the radio or, read about you. And I know Kaiser ruined your life. And whenever I said, well, what's the disease I have? They could never say back then RSD, let alone now complex regional pain syndrome, CRPS. So that's when I decided I'm going to start a nonprofit to raise awareness because I waited 13 and a half years for this diagnosis. I want everybody to know what it is because good God, I didn't want anybody else to live through what I lived through.
And so what has the result been?
Well, we accomplished our mission to raise awareness about CRPS during the first 3 years. We got worldwide television. We still have it going about CRPS. So that's great. But during that time, people would call, and they were mostly women, and they had every kind of pain I could imagine. I mean, fibromyalgia, TMJ, pelvic pain.
Now, does
migraines,
that all come under the heading of this?
Autoimmune.
Because you see,
I have many of them. We all have many of them. I mean, you don't just get one.
Oh, so those are separate things.
They're separate, yes, but someday I think they're going to be, you know, under the same umbrella.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I could say I have CRPS, I have fibromyalgia, I have chronic fatigue syndrome, osteoarthritis, I have TMJ. I don't claim a lot of them. I just say, you know, I got two, you know. Because I think someday they will all be the same. And chronic pain is chronic pain. Mm. You know, I mean, it really is all the same. So, but I was hearing from all these women and they were all saying, but I'm not crazy. It was one of the first things they said to me, but I don't belong in an institution. I don't need to see a psychiatrist. And that really upset me. And so at the same time, it comforted me because I realized, Janet, that it wasn't personal. The doctors were saying it to everybody. It's like, you know, the doctors are running the asylum. I can't remember.
Yes,
what is this
right.
thing?
The insane.
So it was crazy.
Yes.
Was crazy. But it empowered me to realize that this is a women's issue. And so hearing from all those women, helped me to then get to a point where I wanted to change or expand our mission.
Because you could
really
speak for more than just yourself.
Well, and I could speak for more than just, it became a movement rather than I'm raising awareness about a disease. This is a movement with women. And finally, one day, John dropped a pile of papers in my lap. He was truly white as a ghost. I've never seen a ghost, but he was very white, very pale. And he said, "This is what you've been saying for the last 10 years.
Isn't that frustrating?
Yeah, it was liberating because I read a report called The Girl Who Cried Pain, A Bias Against Women and the Treatment of Pain. It was in the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics, written by Diane Hoffman and Anita Tarzian. I work with Diane now. We just love working with her. And I learned that we women are predisposed to all of the chronic pain diseases. We feel pain more intensely than men. We have a lower pain threshold, even though we give birth. Actually, before we give birth, our brain secretes a lot of hormones in our bodies to make our system more like that of a man's. Mm. You know, testosterone is a painkiller. However, when we women report our pain to physicians, we are told that it's hormonal, all in our heads. Mm-hmm. We are given sedatives and psychiatric referrals instead of, you know, pain meds and belief and treatment, like most men in pain. Not all men in pain, but most men in pain. So it is a women's movement now. So now our mission is promoting a better wellness for women in pain.
And
we just changed it.
I just want to know, how long ago was this that you formed this nonprofit?
It was 13 and a half years ago.
Oh, was that long ago?
Yeah, it feels like longer. We always said it was our baby, for Grace, the little girl we wanted to have.
Yeah.
But Kaiser gave me, they gave me an operation so I couldn't even have children.
Oh,
I mean, because they spread it. And it was something I never needed. It was just very sad. But so we say for Grace is our baby and she's crying. And now she's a toddler. Now she's a teenager.
Yeah, I could see that. So what have the results been?
Well, people,
just even in the medical world, when women go to a doctor now.
It's so huge. I mean, people write to me a lot or call me and say, "I got diagnosed because of you. You know, I got diagnosed because of your work." Or now we have other, you know, advocacy pain leaders who say, "I'm doing this because of what you did." You know,
but
you
do
laid
they teach
the ground
this now in medical schools?
They teach it pretty well in medical schools. Okay. Whenever I see a doctor, which isn't very often anymore because they generally hurt me. And truly, they broke my arm. They've almost killed me, you know, a couple times. I don't see doctors except my integrative doctor. But if I see even when I see my general practitioner once a year, I always talk about CRPS. I'm always helping to educate them, and they appreciate it. And if I had something on my skin that needed to be removed, and that doctor wanted to know more about it, and we had done a documentary with the Discovery Channel, and he really wanted that. And he looked it up.
Can we find
this
to see it, the documentary on the Discovery Channel?
We can find it on For Grace's website, which is spelled out forgrace.org, forgrace.org, or go to painmattersfilm.com.
Painmattersfilm.com.
Great.
Okay, so we can
1 hour incredible, best documentary I've ever seen about pain. First, only documentary, but best piece of media I've ever seen.
Now, what made the difference? Like, you're not in pain now, right?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm always in pain.
Okay.
Even when I dream. Yeah, I can't remember not having pain.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible. It's
not enough to make you
horrible. It is. I can't describe how horrible this disease is. And the worst part is the abandonment. Everybody.
Don't talk about that. I don't understand
that. It's the emotional part. All of my family, none of them could deal with it, except my mother. And my mother was really a big advocate for me for a long time. And then my partner, John, we've been together 35 years. Can't get married because of the marriage penalty law. But we actually had our marriage penalty law. We had our commitment ceremony 20 years ago on my birthday this New Year's Eve. It'll be 20
But
years.
I don't know what that marriage penalty
law is. If you get sick really young and you haven't worked long enough and paid enough into Social Security, you can't marry someone unless they're very wealthy. So when the Supreme Court made the incredibly brilliant decision to let everyone get married, they forgot about people who get disabled.
Another thing I've never heard of. This sounds outrageous.
Isn't it surprising?
You're saying that there's a law about people who can't get married if someone... Could you just say that again?
I can't.
Please?
Yeah. Well, what would happen is I would lose my health care. I would lose my benefits, but the benefit that's so valuable to me is my health care. If I get sick, you know, I'd have Medi-Cal.
Oh, so you're saying...
I have Medicare or Medi-Cal. That's the best insurance.
So in a practical sense, it's not possible for you to get married.
I don't have that choice.
Uh-huh.
No.
Okay.
No. And John was with me when I got ill. We were together when we started dating. We were very serious when we were 19. We already knew. So if he had had his life, you know, and met me much later, maybe it would have been different. But I'm in love with John. He's the man I want to marry. He asked me to marry him when we were 20, actually, before I was sick, and I said, we have our whole lives to get married, John. Right now, we're going to focus on our careers. Let's focus on our careers.
What is John's really what is John's career?
He runs For Grace with me, and he works too hard, and he's my caregiver.
Oh, you think now, of course.
Yeah, he does all the administrative, writing all the grants, and he's up at 4, you know, before I get up. It's too difficult because, see, family members, they all left. None of them helped him. And this is where Pain Matters goes, and it was inspired by the book, because the book goes very, very dark. And there were things that John didn't want me to talk about. And I had him write a take at the end of every chapter because my co-writer said, no one's going to believe this happened to you. And when he didn't want me to talk about a couple really dark things, Ron Kovic helped me and said, if you don't tell it all, what's the point?
What's the help if you don't, right?
So that helped me with John. It was like therapy. And that's when I went into my remission is after I finished the book. So I believe in narrative therapy.
And what does remission mean to you if you say you're still in pain?
Partial remission means this morning I swam a mile. I cannot walk a block, but I can swim a mile. That's pretty amazing. And the physical therapist broke my arm, my elbow, and I was told without surgery I would never swim again. So, hello! Mm-hmm. I swam a mile this morning. I do ballet, Pilates. I do Feldenkrais. I exercise a lot. I believe very strongly in
self-care. And you do that through the pain.
I don't, you know what? I don't generally hurt when I'm in the water. That's the best I feel. I have some pain, but it's much better when I'm in the water, now that you mention it. And I'm a piano player, and I'm trying slowly to get back to the piano, but since when you have your elbow broken, it's really hard to play the piano.
Oh, because you have to hold it. Your hand. Yeah.
It's very physical when I play ragtime, and I play Mozart and Bach. John didn't know how physical it was. And I was playing like 2-3 hours a night. You know, I get tendonitis really fast. But yeah, getting that back is...
So For Grace.
Yes.
Who gets to learn about this? I mean, what I mean is, I know that
what
sounds like
mean?
A really dumb question. You've got a new group of people who have never heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you broaden your reach? That's what I want to know.
We do it through media. I mean, we get local, we get statewide, national, and we get worldwide media.
Oh, okay.
So we do a lot of that. We do a lot of public speaking. Last year I spoke at the NIH, and I spoke on Capitol Hill.
Okay.
We do
so
a lot of legislation.
You're very well established.
We're very vocal. We're very public.
I'm so glad I know about this now.
I'm so glad you know about this now too, Janet, because you probably know somebody or knew somebody who has this. It's not a rare disease, but it's known as the suicide disease. Loss of spouse, loss of family, suicide are considered symptoms of this disease. People can't survive it. And I had a plan of suicide for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I did not think I would ever live to be 30. I didn't think I would make it. It's too devastating.
Yes.
I mean, because you lose everything. It's not... people with CRPS will say, yeah, I wish I had AIDS, you know, or wish I was paralyzed, because at least you know what you can count on. You never know with this pain how bad it's going to be, and that you from day to day, even from hour to hour, sometimes in 5 minutes, I'll go from a level, you know, between a 0 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
0 meaning no pain, mm-hmm. 10 meaning the worst pain imaginable. I can go
so you
from
can't,
a,
you can't
a 5
count
to
on your own body. You can't trust your own body.
It's not, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, that's what
every
I mean
day.
By that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're negotiating a television show right now, and I'm hopefully going to host it, but there is that problem. You know, will Cynthia be able to host it? You know, every time we need her, will she be there? And I work through literally, I sometimes, when we're working through a day, I'll take my breaks and literally scream because I'm in that much pain. Yeah.
So I knew a doctor once who had said two things that struck me. One was, you are the world's expert on your own body.
Smart
doctor.
And
if you say something's wrong, it is. And it is the job of the doctor to find out what it is.
Where's the doctor? I love
no longer alive.
Wow.
And the other thing was, you cannot underestimate the emotional tone that physical pain takes.
Wow. That's really interesting.
So all that you're...
Yeah, and yet I'm so healthy. I mean, I've been through 33 years of this excruciating body-wide physical pain. I mean, I was in really, really bad pain yesterday. It's just my arm flared very bad yesterday. And I was at almost a 10 last week because I traveled for
Thanksgiving. What do you do for yourself when that happens?
Try to survive it. I have Vicodin, but I almost never take it. I haven't taken it in probably, but I'll keep it with me. And I know that it's there.
Do you hang
generally
on?
I get in the pool because that makes me better.
Oh, so is that near you and convenient?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's healing. Okay. I got in the pool on Saturday and I thought, I don't know if I'm going to make it out to that pool.
Does knowing that it's going to subside at some point since it comes and goes, does that help you at all?
Yeah. Since I've been better, since I've gone into this partial remission, I know that it will get better. There's the fear. We tend to quote unquote catastrophize. Pain patients don't like that word, but we really do. And it's natural. We look at, hey, look what happened last time. I was bedridden 10 years. That can happen again.
Well, also your own pain is the center of the universe. There's no getting away. I mean, it seems like the entire universe, and it is for that moment forever.
And it's supposed to be, you know, pain when we're healthy.
It's
a symptom for an underlying problem. Take care of the problem. The pain goes away. But with CRPS and so many other, you know, with chronic pain, once it sets up in your nervous system, it's a disease. And that's what people need to understand. And that's what we were talking at the NIH. It's a disease. Chronic pain is a disease.
Is anything done with like brain scans for people who are in the midst of this?
I know that they're doing brain scans now where they can prove that you have chronic pain. So this is very exciting. Now, they're not going to give every patient, you know, a brain scan to prove that they're in pain. But now we know that it can be proven.
But would a scan show that? I mean, so why not give a scan if somebody is in...
Because it's expensive. See, remember, healthcare in this country, for the most part, it doesn't work. I was in undercare for the first 15 years. I got no care at all. I just got abuse. And I mean, really, really severe. I was put in a hospice where I was just abused and I basically begged to get out. I'm not getting it now because I refuse it. But once I got really good insurance, then I got overcare. And that job is keeping the patient sick. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be a patient.
Oh.
I don't want this to be my job. So if you think about it, it's very scary, but that's what I was told, you know, we need to try to straighten out your right arm. And I thought, well, why? What's the big deal? I'm playing the piano 2 hours a day. I'm throwing a football. I'm playing, you know, I'm swimming a mile. I'm doing handstands. And I said, what's so great about a straight arm?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And she said, well, they'll cover it. It was covered. And I finally agreed to let her work on the back of my head, shoulder, and back. And she cheated, yanked my arm, and broke it. And then I was desperate because they didn't diagnose a broken arm for a year. Imagine that, walking around with a broken arm or wheeling around with a broken arm for a year. So I was, when finally my rheumatologist said, I want to put you on this infusion drug, Benlysta, because you have lupus, which I didn't have, we found out. But I was so desperate, I found out cancer was a side effect, and I thought, I'd rather die from cancer than deal with this level of pain again.
What about the neurosurgeon?
Oh, I could just go on. They told me I had breast cancer twice. They told me I was dying from something called DCIS. I did not take it. I did not take their lumpectomy, chemotherapy, and radiation. I just knew not to trust these doctors. I was fine. And now DCIS is a huge story. New York Times has done 2 articles about it. Women, please take care of yourselves. I'm huge with self-care.
What about neurologists? I mean, you read a lot about what Oliver Sacks has done.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about like one synapse or however it works,
mm-hmm.
letting your brain know that you're in pain, and if it's ignored, that takes over. I mean, there must be some physical indication of this, and you're saying a scan would show this.
A brain scan would show it, yeah. They don't do that very often.
All right.
But
well,
we know that we can finally prove
right.
that people do have chronic pain and that it's a disease. And that's really important that people understand that chronic pain is a disease just like diabetes, just like cancer.
Oh, I can see that that's what you're saying.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what everyone's
working on.
Well,
I have
right
a question
now.
Because I am
you
about
love. You have a question?
I do. I have several. But this one is a little sliding to one side because I always want to know,
mm-hmm.
being about love letters as I am, if you were to sit down and write a letter right now, who would get one from you? Gratitude, appreciation, love?
John would get my first letter. Now you made me cry.
Do you ever write?
I can't write very much with this, but I'm a writer.
Yes.
So I have to dictate. But
well, you
can
dictate and then at least sign
there
it.
There you go. Yeah.
You can sign something, right?
Exactly.
So it has the touch of your hand forever.
The touch of my hand. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. I love that. Okay, so John... Dick, my editor, and my surrogate father would get one. My mother.
Oh, so you have a whole list.
Oh, my gosh. Maria Shriver, Jane Goodall. She's on our board. She's an angel. I work with all my heroes. You know, I mean,
how lucky.
I am very lucky. I'm very lucky. Yeah, I've come to see the gifts in the pain.
Okay, so
I've come out the other side. I have survived. I'm going to live the rest of my life, and I think it might be a long life because the doctors keep saying, other than you know, besides this pain thing, you are you know healthy as an ox.
Good.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, I take good gorgeous care ox. Of okay, I have something I want to say because I'm so about history,
okay.
And especially when I talk to people who are doing something significant mm-hmm. in an area, mm-hmm. you're part of a history.
Yeah.
You
wow.
are part of a medical history right now. Someday.
Wow.
Who knows what this will be in the textbooks.
Wow.
And you will be the one who brought awareness and started this movement.
Thank you. Put it on the map. Yeah.
Put it on the map.
Yeah.
What about leaving a little paper trail? Letters to people. You sign them.
Yeah.
I know if that would be an effort to write a whole letter, sometimes there's a physical reason you can't, but
right.
you can still sign something.
Yeah.
So it'll be your signature.
Right.
And mail them around to these people. And
right.
there'll be somehow a collected... Essentially a collected historical essay.
I love that, Janet.
Because when you document, when every love letter you write is your story documented in your own hand.
Right, right. That's very cool. And also, I didn't mention my sisters. Literally, we make our families, I've learned. And my sisters in pain, we together do a conference every year. And it's such a, it's that room is so filled with love.
You should start. Collecting how you feel about all these people. Because you can't reread a phone call. And they'll have something forever. And their children will have something. You'll all be connected in this way for generations.
Yeah. Oh, this is fabulous. When people will say to me, women will say, you know, it took a year, you know, it took a year and a half for me to get a diagnosis. And they're so angry. And I just smile because I think, it took a year and a half. For me, it was 13 and a half, and I didn't get care for 15.
Okay,
and
so in your own handwriting, in your own words, and also I'm gathering that you get emails from people.
Yes.
Do you print them out?
We do. We save the emails.
You print them.
We got one recently from a woman, Lucy Johnson, and she's the editor for the London Sunday Express, and she was diagnosed with CRPS recently, and she said, "Your book took me from suicide to hope."
Oh,
can you imagine?
No, I mean, yes, I can.
Yeah, it's
so
a pretty wonderful job.
But you're printing them out, these emails.
Yes, I keep all of them.
Because this technology, you won't get anything in another however many years.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I don't print them out. We have them on the computer. We save them. Good point, Janet.
Because the computers of, many years ago, you can't use, you won't be able to access all this beauty that you have.
Good
on your computer someday.
Beauty. Okay, I'm going to start printing. I will print them out.
Because one of the best information storage systems ever is still a letter, but on good paper that won't corrode.
Yeah.
And good ink that won't. Okay. Oh, you'll do that.
Yes.
Just leave a pile for, let somebody find it in 100 years.
I love it.
Something important about what you did. Oh,
okay.
Thank you for doing this with me.
Absolutely.
What? Go ahead. You want to see
this? What's amazing is that I'm able to sing again.
Oh,
I'm able to travel. And I want to tell everybody that no matter what happens to you, you can still live your passions. And you'll find things, I completely reinvented myself.
This is your CD of songs, right?
Wonder. And it actually is. The wonder was how I lost my voice for so long. And then I just, through Jane Goodall, who helped me, went to Africa. So we found that elephant.
Oh, the elephant in the background.
It was so incredible. And just that you can, it's like, really, whatever we want to happen, we can make happen. We might have to make it. We might get to the opportunity to make it happen differently than it would have happened if we hadn't had our, quote unquote tragedy. But there are such gifts in tragedies. Let's take the gifts and let's make the world better for other people.
Had you not gone through this, and been the kind of person that took it to such action, all the women after you would have found no help either.
Right. Thank you.
Maybe you were meant to do this.
I think I was meant to do this, Janet.
Totally.
It was a beautiful thing to say. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
because you have done something wonderful. I'm so glad we met.
I am too.
Thank you, honey, for doing this.
What a delight. Well, thank you for having me.
Maybe in the future when you have more to talk about or more things that you're doing and you want to come back.
Something to talk about?
Will you come back?
I will come back. My pleasure. What an honor.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Janet.
I'm just going to say goodbye for now. Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And Cynthia, you say your name, because why not in your
Cynthia
own voice?
Cynthia Toussaint. And I'm going to start my letters tonight.
Okay, Woo! Wonderful. I love giving homework to people who will do it, because it's important. You can see historically.
Absolutely. I get it.
I rest my case.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk to you later. And thank you all for listening. Bye.